Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. Coming up, the second part of that interview with Ander Herrera, where he talks about Paul Pogba and how he's still got the potential to be one of the best players in the world. And would you believe it's a year ago to the day in which Liverpool mounted that extraordinary comeback against Barcelona in the Champions League? Stevie and Craig with us to reflect on that. Shaka here as well for what will be a special extra time. But we start by bringing you what's going on in the world regarding coronavirus. And of course, it's great news, isn't it? In Germany, kicker summing it up quite nicely. Kickoff again. The Bundesliga will return. Just a reminder how the table looked before things were suspended. Bayern Munich top of the table. However, it was pretty close, wasn't it? Four clear of Dortmund, Leipzig in third, Borussia Mönchengladbach then in fourth. Well, the schedule has been announced then. May the 16th, we'll see six games in total. Borussia Dortmund against Schalke, certainly the standout tie there. And then 24 hours later, Cologne taking on Mainz, and it's Union Berlin playing host to the defending champions Bayern Munich. And then on Monday, it's Werder Bremen against Bayer Leverkusen. Julian Laurent and Gab Marcotti with me. Jules, I want to start with you, and a little bit away from the Bundesliga and what we're talking about. Is it true that your president, the president of France, is calling up other presidents and saying, don't let football happen?
Yes, it is true. I was going to say, unfortunately, I'm not really sure why Emmanuel Macron has tried so hard to convince other countries to suspend their season and finish their season like they did in France. Because this is not the first time. He's been trying pretty much for a whole week, calling Angela Merkel and tell her that the Bundesliga should not resume, doing the same for Italy, Spain, England, the French sports minister, Roxana Maracineanu, calling her counterpart in all those countries as well to do the same. I guess maybe it's all about unity, and Macron wanted Europe to be together in this and to work together and doing the same thing. However, it's one really desperate for him, I think, to do that. As we've been saying on the show, everybody has been facing this crisis in a very different way. And if some countries are ready to start again playing football, great for them. We clearly were not in France. But yeah, it's not, I think, the best image for Macron to have now with those things coming out.
What do you make of this, Gav?
It's very odd. I mean, I don't think it's great PR for him. If you're going to go, and if this is something you want to do, if you don't want to if you don't want to divert resources or attention away from more pressing issues, this is something you do beforehand. This is something before you go and you shut down France. You have these conversations before. Now that they've shut down and everybody else is trying to get back, and in the Bundesliga's case, actually getting back, it kind of feels like, it feels pretty immature, frankly, because, you know, the reality is other countries are, by definition, other countries. And, and to do this, even take Jules's point about Europe and so on, he's not doing this via the European Union. He's taking this upon himself because a ton of other European countries, and it's not just the big leagues you mentioned, but it's Poland, it's Portugal, it's Denmark. A lot of other countries are also on their way back to playing. So he seems very much out of step.
Let's move it forward then to what we've seen happening in Spain. Of course, players being tested over the last 48 hours. Barcelona reporting, for example, that all the tests came back negative regards to their squad. Where are they, Jules, in their comeback trail?
Well, I think they're on track, and Javier Tebas was very happy to see all the players going back to training, albeit individually and with social distancing. We saw Zinedine Zidane in Madrid, for example, welcoming his players with a 2 meter distance, with the gloves and the mask, and everybody had them as well. Like you said, everybody has been tested, training has resumed, and then they're still hoping for the league to come back on June the 12th, which I think is a realistic target, really. Javier Tebas is trying his hardest, and we've heard a lot from him. He's been talking a lot, he's been very vocal and very present in all these crises. There's still some issues to sort out, and we heard David Aganzo, who is the head of the players union in Spain, saying that there was a lot of issues that players wanted resolved or questions that they had and they wanted answers. Suso, for example, publicly came out and saying, my wife is expecting a baby, I don't want any risk and going back playing with putting them at risk and the health at risk, which you could understand. I think there's a lot of players around. We saw Eibar as well, Eibar's players saying that with the fear of going back playing. So there's still a lot of issues, especially on safety, to resolve. But at least the plan is there. There's clearly progress so far, and there's a good aim in a month's time to start playing again. And I think they will achieve that.
Meanwhile, in Italy, Gab, how much have they learned from what we've seen in Germany to try and get Serie A back started?
Well, look, they've been tracking things very, very closely with everything that they've been doing in Germany, both with the testing regimen. Players have been tested all week, and as a result, we're getting positive tests back. Fiorentina testing players and staff, three staff members and three Fiorentina players testing positive. But, you know, the attitude is that's not necessarily a bad thing, because obviously if you don't test people, you don't find out who's positive. I think the big breakthrough will come when they manage to go and they meet with the Prime Minister as well. They've been meeting with the Minister of Sport and the Health Committee of the Ministry of Health. The Minister of Sport, Vincenzo Spadafora, who by this point must be a household name to our listeners, and whose name literally, by the way, Dan, in case you were wondering, means swords out. The guy who keeps changing his mind every 48 hours, now all of a sudden he says that he's hopeful that on May 18th they'll be able to return to group training, albeit without contact. They're calling that phase two. Phase three will be full training with contact. And, of course, phase four implicitly means going back and actually playing games.
Just away from the pandemic, just for a moment, just on the front page of Sport, we're seeing them reporting that Lautaro Martinez one step closer to signing for Barcelona. Barca seems to be making no secret in the fact that they want him, Jules, but can they get him? Can they afford him? If it's a player's trade, who's going in the opposite direction?
Well, you're right. That's the biggest question. Can they afford him? So there's one very simple way. He's got a release clause of 111 million euros. You pay that, he's yours. He's yours. He's young. He's clearly the future. He's having an outstanding season with Inter, or at least before the break. So pay it and he's yours. If you can't pay the 111, which they can't, and by the way, I don't know how they can afford Neymar if they can't even pay for Lautaro. But anyway, that's another matter. Then you find another way. The way that they're trying or seem to be trying to find is 60 million euros. So pretty much half of the release clause plus two players. Again, it depends a lot on who those players are. Is it Arturo Vidal, for example, who you would know Antonio Conte is probably keen to work again with? And I don't know, Ousmane Dembele, is it Semedo and Alenia, who are seems to be the two players that Inter really want from that Barca squad? It's hard to know until you know exactly who the players are, because it's different if 60 million plus Coutinho and Griezmann, or if it's 60 million with Dan and Gab. It's not the same story. So I still think it's a very hard deal to make, money plus players to swap, but maybe that's the only thing that Barca can afford right now.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. For a lot more from Gab and Jules, you can download their latest podcast, which dropped today, actually. You can check that out over on the website.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
In case you missed the first part of Alexis Nunes' interview with Ander Herrera, you can check that out over on the website. It's now, as promised, time for part two, where he starts off by talking about Neymar.
What's so special, you know, about him now that you've seen it up close and person day to day? Because, unfortunately, he does come under a lot of criticism, you know, as well in the media and stuff. But what's he just like at PSG and what makes him so good?
For me, he's one of the of the of the big surprises I have found in my career, because as you say, all what media says, all what media speaks about him is not always positive. They are always trying to find the way to kill him. And I found a guy that is happy every day, that is trying to make the group strong. He's organizing some dinners at his house to be together, to try to win as many trophies as possible. Smiling every day, creating a good atmosphere in the team. As I told you before, he told me he was happier than ever in the club, in the team. So it looks like I read about a different player than the one that I found. Mm. But I understand he's very... all the people wants to talk about him. Maybe, I don't know, maybe because of his hair, or maybe because of the way he dresses, or maybe because he always plays smiling. He always plays to enjoy football every day.
And Kylian Mbappe, I mean, it sounds stupid that I almost have to ask this, but how good is he? Because we all know and we see it, but again, you see it in person. What's it like either playing with him or coming against him, you know, even in training? Do you have any like moment where it's like, wow, this kid's real?
Yeah, to be honest, what they can say about Kylian is that sometimes in training, he looks like he's training with kids, you know? The way he runs, the way he I don't know in English how you say exactly, but the way he makes the steps when he's running, and he leaves you behind him, and it looks like we are kids, we are 12 years kids, and he's Usain Bolt running, you know what I mean? and in football, you can find some examples like Kylian in the last years, like very quick players. The players that they leave players behind because they are so quick, so strong. But after, when he's in front of the goalkeeper, he has the capacity to stop, to be cold, if you can say that, and to score a lot of goals. So that's not easy. When you find the balance between the speed, the strength, and the calmness to score goals in front of the goalkeeper.
One of the people as well that's similar to Neymar, I suppose, gets a lot of a bad reputation and press, and still is now here in England, is Paul Pogba. But like you said, this man is a World Cup winner. You know, he has proven how he can lead. How do you see him and his role still in Manchester United? Like, you still think that we could definitely see the best of Paul Pogba in a United shirt?
I haven't spoken with him for a long time, and I don't know what he wants to do. It's true that every day in the papers we can read that he wants to leave, or Manchester United are going to sell him or whatever. But I don't really know what he wants to do. If he wants, he can be the best midfielder in the world. In terms of qualities, he has everything. I have already answered this question a lot of times, and I'll always say the same. I have never seen a midfielder that has all the qualities that you can have. He can recover a lot of balls. He can head the ball and score goals. He can defend. He can attack. He can do one against one. It's difficult to steal the ball from him because he's so strong and so tall, and you know. But it's true that since he came to the club, he had some ups and downs. But when he was good, he was really good, amazing. It was a pleasure to play with him. So I think all the Manchester United fans, they want to see the best of Paul Pogba for 1 year and 2 years. And I'm optimistic. I think that can happen in the next years, or probably in the next year. And with Bruno Fernandes, a player that really like, with players that they are more adapted to the league, to the team right now, I think Manchester United, they can do great things.
Lots of things to pick apart there. Welcome back, Jules. Frank Leboeuf is with us as well. Jules, let's start, shall we, with Paul Pogba. Ander Herrera talking about how great he could be and how great he has seen him to be. Yeah, obviously, hasn't done it at Manchester United. And a lot of people have cited the fact that, yeah, but look at the players that are surrounding him. Yet we've seen Bruno Fernandes come in and give this team an instant lift.
Yes, you're right. I'm not sure if the comparison with Bruno Fernandes is right, because when Pogba arrived in the summer 2016, he also had a very good first few weeks, first few games. And that came on the back of the Euros with France as well, where he went all the way to the final and had a very short holiday. So of course, there was some highs, and we've seen him with some really good performances, but also a lot of lows and the injuries, but not just the injuries. I don't think the environment was really right for Paul at Manchester United. The changes of managers, the players that he played with as well, the bit of a mess inside the club. And it's a real shame because I think, like Ander said, he has the potential to be the best midfielder in the world. There's nothing that he cannot do on the football pitch, but it has to be the right environment for him to thrive as well.
As a football fan, Frank, we want to see players at their very best. And watching Paul Pogba when he's bossing midfield is a great spectacle, but we just haven't seen it enough, have we, at Manchester United?
Yeah, you're right, Dan. I think it's there is a frustration, and it's understandable when you have seen his performances. As Jules said, he started pretty well. I would say even more than that, he did well. And he showed that he could be a leader. But I think that there is a lack of consistency in his game. No doubt that he's a fantastic player. He showed it at Juventus, and he showed it, as I just said, at the beginning when he joined Manchester United. But since then, there seems to be so many problems around him or around the club or around his teammates that, in fact, we don't see the Pogba we want to see with all the quality that he has. There is, again, a lack of consistency where maybe he's a leader in the dressing room, but it doesn't show that he can be a technical leader like Bruno Fernandes immediately showed to the crowd when he signed for Manchester United.
Meanwhile, what an indictment it is on Neymar's career so far at PSG that the big headline from what Herrera had to say was that he's happy now. It's an incredible soap opera that we've seen. Obviously, a lot of media intensity regarding Neymar, but a lot of it has been brought on himself, Jules, and the fact that this world record fee, this player is now happy, kind of says it all, doesn't it? It says all about this sad story.
You're right. 2.5 years, a little bit more than 2.5 years after he joined Paris. And let's remember, he wanted to leave Barcelona to come to Paris. He's the one who made the first step for that move to happen by picking his phone and calling Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the PSG chairman. So you're right. There's been a lot of issues when he arrived. I think obviously there was the two big injuries in January and February of his two first season that prevented him from playing in the key matches, especially in the Champions League after Christmas. But also his attitude and the lack of maturity that he showed. It's great that he's happy again, and this is something that we've heard before, even before Ander Herrera told us in that interview, and we reported it on the show that there was a sort of a new Neymar, almost a more happy Neymar in Paris, enjoying the city more, enjoying the club, his teammates, with Thomas Tuchel as well, the manager, and that was great. We saw on the pitch as well with the game against Borussia Dortmund in the second leg what he could do. Now he needs to take it to the next level even, and to inspire the rest of the team to go even further for Paris.
Footballer happy, eh, Frank?
Yes, but I don't know if it's even the truth. I mean, what do you expect from Herrera? Do you think Herrera will say, no, I'm not happy, Neymar is not happy, I think Neymar's going to leave, Neymar is not a good player? Of course he's going to say nice things, and maybe, and sure, well, let's say surely it's true, but we don't really care. I don't care if Neymar is happy. I want to see him showing maturity, skills, and what we expect from a big star, a fantastic player that he can be. And the rest, I don't care. I really don't care. I've been waiting for more than two years to see the real Neymar, the Neymar we saw before, the real Neymar we saw in Barcelona, killing Paris Saint-Germain in the remontada in Champions League. We want to see, and all the fans, they want to see that. The rest is pure, nice story, but really don't care.
Meanwhile, Frank, we've got to mention your T-shirts. Obviously, as humble as ever, Frank, in this world, you and Ronaldo. And it was interesting, wasn't it, Herrera talking about Kylian Mbappe and that extraordinary pace that he has. How would you fancy defending him?
Well, like I just tried to do with right now on the T-shirt with Ronaldo, make sure that the guy that can't get the ball, because after the football, because after it's too late. Those players have so much skill. And it was a real honor to play against Ronaldo. And we saw so many disasters that he did against defenders that the day I played in final, I knew that that was the only things that I could do to avoid seeing him scoring a goal. And it's the same with Mbappe. those guys are special, like we just talked about Neymar. If they get the ball and they are on a great day or a great night, they're going to kill your save. We saw that for more than a decade with Messi, Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo, this Ronaldo, Zidane, and so many other players that you all know as a defender, if you want to cope with those players, that's the only way you can try to avoid them being fantastic.
There's one man that could pull off that T-shirt. It's you, Frank. Thank you very much, boys. Just a reminder, that full interview between Alexis Sandra Herrera is available as a special podcast, which you can go and download now.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
With thousands of locally owned NAPA stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a NAPA Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at NAPA Online, you can count on NAPA know-how.
It was a year ago to the very day, that extraordinary comeback for Liverpool against Barcelona, winning at Anfield by 4-0 to book a place in the next round of the Champions League. An extraordinary comeback, of course, dominating the newspaper headlines the next day. Craig and Stevie with us. Stevie, when it comes to European nights at Anfield, it's got to be near the top, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think the only thing that would probably top it is the final in Istanbul. And certainly not for drama and goals, but because it's the final. That is the only thing, in my opinion, that separates these two games. And for one club to have two nights like this in their history is absolutely incredible. I mean, people will argue which one's the best. Personally, I think Istanbul is, but my goodness, this one at home against Barcelona is not a kick in the pants off that.
And what makes it more extraordinary, Craig, obviously there was no Salah, no Firmino, you had Origi starting, Shaqiri up front, yet still they did it.
Yeah, we went into that week, discussing what we're going to talk about around the Champions League, and the fact that both the Liverpool and Tottenham games were pretty much done and dusted, you would have thought. And when you think about the team selection or the team that was available to Jurgen Klopp and the team that he was playing against, it made it all the more incredible. Look, it can be two things, and I think it was. Barcelona imploded. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they just didn't do the basics. And Liverpool were magnificent, and they went for the jugular. And they did everything they needed to do, helped by a great crowd at Anfield on an absolutely brilliant night. I agree with Stevie. I think that, coming back in a Champions League final is certainly the bigger of the two. But that was it was just another amazing night at Anfield.
Let's not forget as well, the rhetoric coming from Barcelona was banging the drum. We learnt our lesson from Roma. We won't let it happen again. Yet they let it happen again, Stevie.
Yeah, I think you've got to praise Liverpool for actually taking it off them. Yes, they defended horribly, but I'm not so sure that, as much as the rhetoric was, well, we've learned a lesson, it won't happen again, this team must have realised that even though they beat Liverpool 3-0 in the first leg at home, they got outplayed. Liverpool were the better side. You know, you can point the finger at Liverpool and say this, being 3-0 down, obviously a lot of it was down to Messi, because this was Messi's night, but a lot of it was down to poor finishing from Liverpool. Liverpool created plenty of chances in that first leg. And for me, it wasn't so much Barcelona that pulled themselves through. Messi pulled them through, and Liverpool let themselves down in the first leg as far as their finishing. So, you know, Barcelona must have known that they were going to Anfield and there's a good chance they were going to lose the game. And personally, I thought Liverpool would win the game. My biggest problem was Will they stop Messi and will they stop Barcelona getting a goal? Because one goal is going to kill it completely.
Do you know when I think about this game, Dan, and there's so many points about the performance from Liverpool that were magnificent. And Stevie mentioned it the other day when we were talking, was the saves from Alisson as well early on, which we shouldn't forget. But the one thing that just, whenever I think about this game, rightly or wrongly, the one thing that springs to mind, and it's the first thing that comes to my mind, is the corner kick. The Trent Alexander-Arnold corner kick for that goal. Because I think it epitomised, amongst all the other great things Liverpool did, it epitomised the performance of the two teams. It was the quick thinking, the sharpness and the quality of Liverpool, and it was the downright sloppiness and lack of doing the basics from Barcelona. We saw senior players like Piqué and Busquets and all these guys with their backs turned to play when a corner kick was coming in, in a game where they were under the cosh and losing and about to go out. I mean, that was unforgivable. And whenever I think about this game, that minute of that moment of Alexander-Arnold putting the ball in that quadrant is the thing that springs to mind.
Craig mentions it, the lack of professionalism, everything that surrounded this game. Yet Valverde still kept his job afterwards, which is extraordinary, as mentioned before, after what happened against Roma as well.
Yeah, I mean, usually the coach carries the can. The truth is, you know, we all said, well, he had to do better and set his team up a lot more defensively, particularly in the second half, you know, to make some changes just to block everyone down. But the truth of the matter is, they don't have players on the field or sat on the bench, never mind just on that evening, but right now, they don't have defenders, you know. So, Barcelona are a side who, when they're clicking going forward, will destroy anybody. They can. But they can't defend. Because they're not a complete team.
They have defenders, and surely on that night, they should have been able to dealt with the likes of Shaqiri, could have dealt with Origi, Robertson taken off at half-time. Everything was kind of there for them. I get your point. No. I completely get your point that defensively they were going to be vulnerable.
Dan, tell me who.
Come on.
What do you mean? Tell me who. You know,
it's a team that had won that league back to back.
Gerard Piqué is way past his best.
Yeah, but Gerard
Piqué is the main man for Barcelona defensively.
You gave them going into the second leg, Stevie. You're saying that people can't defend. They're not very good.
Get the chair on them and stand them on the goal line.
In the last minute to make it four. It's like saying, well, you know, whatever happened, Barca were always vulnerable.
Daniel, you don't know what you're talking about. You've got players in defensive positions who cannot defend. So what do you think is going to happen when you cannot defend? I'll tell you what, the only way you get through it is if your forwards and your Messis and these other guys are putting the ball in the back of the net and up the other end. Because if you're relying on players like Piqué, who's past his best, people like Semedo, Jordi Alba can't defend. He's fantastic going forward. But he can't defend. You've got Busquets in the middle of the park who can't get around. You know, you've got a middle three that can't defend. So where's the defending coming from, Dan? It's one thing to say, well, they should be able to. Well, guess what? If you don't have players that can defend, you better make sure you're putting the ball in there up the other end. And they didn't do it on the second game at Anfield, and they were in complete disarray because they didn't have anybody in control. Nobody in control.
I tell you, this is. I tell you what, the one thing that's impressed me during this conversation is the fact that bookshelf behind you, Steve, he's managed to stay in the wall, because he's almost headbutting the camera there, Dan. He's getting very angry with you. But what's noticeable is it's Piqué and now Ramos. His hatred for Spanish defenders is out there.
Well, here's the thing. You know, Dan's comment is telling you that, you know, he's thinking, well, guys plays for Barcelona, you know, one of the best teams in the world. Surely they can defend. That's not the case, Dan. It's not the case. They're so good going forward generally that they don't have to defend.
The one thing I'd say,
but then when they're asked the question, they show exactly that they can't do it. They can't handle good players going at them at pace. They can't handle the movement. They can't handle the physicality. I mean, there's another thing. You know, Liverpool for 90 minutes, from the start to the finish, were absolutely flying. I mean, you talk about a physical effort. You know, we, as players, and certainly I did it as a coach, I would say to my team, right, we need to get out the blocks quick, but then there'll come a time where we can't just go for 90 minutes at 100 miles an hour, because you run out of steam. Well, this Liverpool team on this night absolutely crushed that thought, because from the first to the last minute, they were at it 100%. Now, the goals, when they got the goals, is huge as well. You know, when you get a goal in the first 10 minutes, again, that fires you on. You get a goal early in the second half, that puts another step in your stride. You get the equaliser, you've got the crowd behind you, and then you get the fourth with 10 minutes to go, and the only thing you have to do is for another 10 minutes, use your brains and defend. And you saw what proper defenders do, Dan. Liverpool never gave anything away in that, I think it was 12 minutes they had to see out to get through. They never gave them a sniff. That's defending. That's why Liverpool are who they are right now. Because not only are they fantastic going forward, but they're fantastic defensively. Now, every single one in the Liverpool back four would oust every single one in that back four to Barcelona without even losing a heartbeat. That's what real defending is. And at the end of the day, the complete team got through deservedly.
I tell you what, he's trying when do we bring to up make up for all Madrid? Those people say that he's a Liverpool hater now. Says that he's trying to win them around. I tell you, the one thing that, you know, to go back to the defensive point, the argument that both of you guys were making there, there is no doubt the defenders didn't do the basics, particularly the experienced guys that they had under pressure. But the one sort of memory, and it's quite vivid from that evening, I can't really remember the exact players and the positions, but it was the middle of the park. Liverpool completely overran Barcelona in the middle of the park. They were too quick for them. They picked up every second ball. They got in behind them too often. And that did ask the question of the Barcelona back four, which they weren't able to come up with the answer. So the midfield certainly didn't help a back four that was already creaking. Liverpool completely smothered them in the middle of the park, and that gave them total control of the game.
Good stuff, guys. Thank you very much. Maybe not as lively. Mark Ogden talking to Mark Donaldson. Oggy was at that game. Talks to Mark about the memories of being there at Anfield. But that brings us to the end of what has been a busy old show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned, though, for extra time. Shaka and Craig join me to answer some of your tweets. Stay with us. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Shaka with me, along with Craig. Craig, what was the general feeling towards England-born players playing for Scotland during your time? Were they under constant scrutiny to prove their nationalism?
No. And there was a few. Matt Elliott was one. Neil Sullivan was another. Stuart McCall, actually, in the early days. Stuart was, I think, brought up in England, played for Rangers at the time, but had a strong sort of Yorkshire accent. But nobody was more tenacious on the field than Stuart McCall, and gave as much as Stuart McCall. Don Hutchinson had, I think Scott Gemmell brought up in England because his dad Archie played at Nottingham Forest, amongst other clubs. So it's just a ridiculous notion. None of the lads or coaching staff batted an eyelid about where people were born. As I say, you know, me and the wife are Scottish, but our kids were born all over, so it happens.
Who do you think they would play for, Craig, your kids, if they played at a national level, Scotland or England?
Well, I think, having asked my oldest where he would consider himself from, he said England. And I would imagine... Right. I would imagine most of them would say, if they had a choice, they would say they feel they're English. That's just the way they found out. Who am I to argue?
Shaka, did you play for England like under-19s or something, very young?
As an overage player for the under-23s, and I played with England B as well.
But it was never a doubt that Trinidad and Tobago obviously was going to be your choice?
No. Never at all. Once I got that call, the decision was made. As a matter of fact, Kevin Keegan tried to name me in the squad in 99 for the Euro qualifiers, but I'd made my mind up that I was committing to Trinidad, so turning him down.
Oh, I wish you'd played in goal. We might have won that Euro 2000 qualifier. The double header. Oh, bloody hell. If you'd only played in goal instead of David Seaman. Oh, boy.
Shaka, who's the best goalkeeper of the past decade? Buffon, Neuer, De Gea, or Casillas?
You know I'm going to say Gigi Buffon. I'm a huge fan. He will top my list every single time. But for me, arguably the best two goalkeepers we've seen for some time is Gigi Buffon and Iker Casillas. I think everybody else peers in comparison to those two.
Craig, according to your Wikipedia page, during your stint with Celtic, you scored 20 goals in just over 60 appearances. Very different than your Chelsea days. What made the difference?
Well, that's actually wrong. Right. Because it wasn't...
It's not like Wikipedia.
It wasn't 60 appearances and it wasn't 20 goals. I scored 15 goals in my first season, I believe. And I was 9 in my second, and I can't remember the third because it was only halfway through. So both of those figures are wrong, unsurprisingly. But one of the differences was that I think the insinuation here is, was it Scottish football, the difference? Well, that might be partly the case, but I think a big part of it for me was, one, playing in my natural position regular, which was the middle of the park, where I kind of was ushered around a little bit at Chelsea and played on the right quite a bit. And secondly, it was finding a team that suited the way that I played, and having Paul Lambert next to me in the middle of the park. We'd come back from Dortmund that season, and he was the holding midfielder, allowed me to go and get forward. And as I say, the first season when we won the title, I got 15. So I think that was a big difference, that I got a bit of confidence, and I was playing in a very good side, and I was playing with some very good players. And I think for me, that was the big difference.
Shaka, who was the most dedicated teammate to getting better that you ever had?
To getting better? Well, you can interpret this in a couple of ways. Alan Shearer, who I've seen kind of work his way back from countless horrific injuries. I don't think I've seen anybody work as hard on the road to recovery. I'm not sure I'll say Alan Shearer worked hard at getting better. He was a complete striker when he arrived at Newcastle. But he worked harder at his craft than anybody had seen. I'm going to take it from the tone of the question. It's more thinking about young players trying to improve. I'm not sure. Dwight, Stu and John spent countless hours on the training ground. I don't think I'd look any further than those two, in all honesty.
Craig?
Well, some of the Italian boys stick out, like Gianluca Vialli and Gianfranco Zola. But the one that there's two players stick out the most for me. One of them's a big daft goalkeeper, was Mark Poom. Mark Poom, the Estonian international at Derby. I've never seen anybody work as hard or work. I've never seen a goalkeeper work like Mark Poom. He was incessant on the training ground. He was never out the gym, to a point where the coaching staff used to tell him to get out the gym and go home. And when we used to do the bleep tests, which were a measurement of fitness, he used to beat all the outfield players. He was incredible. But the guy that was dedicated as well was Ravanelli. And Ravanelli took his profession so seriously and was such a great professional, it was scary. And all those people, all those moronic idiots, and I include some of the pundits in that used to suggest that Ravanelli was only here for the money, have no idea what they're talking about. Because one, he was a great goal scorer, and two, the guy never had a day off. Fantastic professional.
Shaka, who are you having? Van Nistelrooy or Van Persie?
Oh. I'm going to go Van Persie. I just think maybe because he's more complete. I don't think the Premier League has seen a better in-the-box finisher than than Van Nistelrooy, but certainly Van Persie outside of the box maybe gave you a little bit more than Van Nistelrooy.
Craig?
I think a fully fit, and it's a close one, but a fully fit and functional Van Nistelrooy for me would just edge it. And I think that's why, even after he did his cruciate, just before he signed for Man United and ultimately Sir Alex Ferguson, vetoed it for another year, he still was so keen to get the player that he went back after him. I think that tells you a story.
Why doesn't Craig have any emotional connection to his former club Chelsea like Stevie and Frank do with Liverpool and Chelsea?
Because I've got the memories and I've got friends from my time there, and I had good and bad times at all the clubs. But ultimately, and I think a lot of people struggle with this perception, is that we have a job to do, and that job is not to cozy up, and I'm not saying those two boys do, but that for me, and I can only talk about me, my job's not to cozy up to former clubs. And you well know, Dan, I've never ever in my career broadcast and hid the fact that's the way I'm going to do it. So I have friends and still speak to people involved around those clubs, but for me they get the same analysis and praise and criticism as every other club, and that's the way I'm always going to do it. It's black and white. I'm not a player anymore. I don't owe them anything. They don't owe me anything. It's quite simple, really.
It includes family as well, doesn't it? You take a look at some of your comments in the past. It isn't just clubs that you don't have loyalty to. It's family as well.
In what sense? Explain that one to me.
You weren't holding back for criticism of George Burley, for example, when he was coach of Scotland. You treated him just like any other manager.
Yeah, I think Shaq thought you were talking about the missus and three kids there and the dog. Do you remember?
No,
Shaq. I didn't say a word.
Well, listen, George Burley, and listen, George. Yes, George being my dad's brother and my uncle, George knew the score when he took the international job for Scotland, and I knew the score. And as I say, there are so many pathetic people out there acting as pundits that you want to try doing it with your uncle's a Scotland manager and he's having a tough time. Actually, I didn't find it problematic, and he didn't have an issue with it, to my knowledge. He understood I had a job to do, and my job was to analyse Scotland and his team selections and his team's performances. And they were abject at best, and that's why one of the reasons he got the sack. So it really wasn't an issue for me, and I don't believe it was an issue for him. That's the least of his problems. A bit of criticism from me when you saw the way the team were performing on the field. Look, you got to do that. You're either all in to do this job or you're not. There's too many wishy-washy people out there that want to come take the dollar and take the buck and do a half-assed job. You're either in it or you're not.
Last question is for Shaka. Are you looking forward to going back to the studio, or are you looking forward more to your next vacation?
Let me tell you something. I have not missed the two-hour drive into the studio as much as I have in the last 6 weeks. I need a vacation from staying home.
Are all five kids at home, Shaq?
Got four. Well, four here today. So my eldest has her own place in central Boston, and she kind of goes back and forth to my second daughter is back down in North Carolina where she was finishing up. She just graduated. She just finished all her coursework to graduate. And the youngest three have been here throughout. So, yeah, it's been a full out.
Thank you very much to the gentlemen. Thank you, Shaka. Thank you, Craig. We'll be back tomorrow for more of this. Until then, goodbye.